Monster man, in readiness to kill, closing on victim, adjusting sights, range of fire, unlimited. Monster man awaits command. Wait, no, that's, sorry. I mean, Monster Man, special episode, Overlord. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Kyle. If you'd like to be like Kyle and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also receive all the rewards for other tiers, including every episode of my other podcast, Patron Deities. So Kyle, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy today's episode. Kyle has asked me to talk about a villain from Jack Kirby's Fourth World, since I assume he knows that I am also a great lover of the Fourth World. If you'd like to know more about the Fourth World in general, I did a special episode on it back in August 4th, 2022. I talk about the comics industry history of the Fourth World and all of the various characters in it. You don't really need to know all that stuff in order to enjoy this episode, but you can check it out if you feel like it. To summarize, late 1970, this comic came out in 1971, but in late 1970, comic artist Jack Kirby left Marvel to go to rival company DC Comics following a series of contract disputes with Marvel. Kirby was by far Marvel's most prominent creator, the co-creator of comics like The Fantastic Four, The X-Men, Captain America, basically almost every Marvel character except Spider-Man, and actually he had some things to say about that, but we'll skip those. At DC, he was responsible for a group of comic books that collectively came to be known as The Fourth World, another one of those cool evocative Kirby names where it's not immediately obvious what it actually means. He could always explain it to you, but maybe not always the same way. Anyway. One of those Fourth World books is the one that we're going to look at today, Mr. Miracle. Now, the protagonist of this comic, the eponymous Mr. Miracle, is a super escape artist. He can get out of any trap, he has all kinds of technological tricks, and he is accompanied by his love interest, the ferocious warrior Big Barda, and his sidekick slash mentor Oberon, who, unlike Mr. Miracle and Barda, is a human being, not an alien slash deity, and basically provides ironic commentary on the action. Specifically, we're looking at Mr. Miracle number 2. This issue is best known for introducing one of the most important villains in the Fourth World saga, and indeed one of the classic DC Comics villains generally, Granny Goodness. Granny Goodness is a monstrous figure who runs a nightmarish orphanage on the evil planet of Apocalypse, and specifically, she's responsible for training the children of Apocalypse to become fanatical soldiers for the evil dark side. Granny Goodness is a character who is now so ingrained in our understanding of comic book supervillains that it's not immediately obvious to us how shocking and transgressive she must have seemed at the time. Like, she's playing on the stereotype, kind of like a stock figure in melodrama, of like the cruel proprietor of an orphanage. Think of like Miss Hannigan and Annie. But there's something really horrible about the grotesque devotion that Granny Goodness's creations feel for her. In this episode, or in this issue, Mr. Miracle, the super escape artist, and Oberon must escape from the X-Pit, a giant high-tech death trap created by Granny. But the character that we're going to be focusing on is actually another character introduced in this issue, Overlord, someone who didn't go on to become one of the major villains of the Fourth World on account of how he dies in this issue. Overlord is one of Granny's henchmen, but he is special to her insofar as anyone is special to that absolute monster. At one point, one of her other henchmen calls him her pet and points out that even though Overlord has failed to kill Mr. Miracle, Granny is not punishing him, which she would do to one of her other boys for a much lesser infraction. But that's not even necessarily the thing that Kyle wants me to talk about Overlord. The thing that he wants me to discuss is scale. See, the thing is that in the comic, Overlord never talks face-to-face to anyone. Granny keeps him in a vault, which is a real Granny Goodness move to both protect someone and imprison them at the same time. And when they communicate, they do it on a view screen. You know, you remember when, like, Skype was the ultimate sign that you were dealing with futuristic technology? Anyway, the thing about Overlord is that every time Kirby portrays him, he looks absolutely huge. I'm not a comic art expert by any means, but even I can spot some of the things that Kirby does to make Overlord look enormous, like filling the panel with him so that there's almost no space at the edges, or covering his skin in weird little techno details like the greebling on model spaceships. If you don't make models, you may not be familiar with the term greebling, but if you think of like the Star Destroyer going past in Star Wars, that ship is covered with a bunch of intricate, meaningless detail. That's what's known in the model building community as greebling. And a lot of the time, it was done, even for like professional special effects people, by just like using spare parts from aircraft model kits. The point of it is just to make the surface of the thing look textured and thereby give it the illusion of scale. So Kirby did not like to see empty space in his panels and would doodle on all kinds of weird little techno gizmos and wires and cables and symbols and whatever, but the effect here is to make Overlord seem very large, and he's shown as very powerful with a beam of energy shooting out of his forehead. I mean, honestly, if you wanted a comic artist to draw a colossal alien robot crackling with unearthly power, Jack Kirby would definitely be your guy. But the thing is that once he is finally destroyed by Mr. Miracle and his Mother Box, a kind of intelligent supercomputer who is one of Mr. Miracle's other sidekicks, we discover that Overlord is actually tiny. And in that revelation, his design sort of shifts in significance. So when Overlord was introduced, his kind of massive head seemed to indicate huge intelligence and psychic power. But once he's revealed at his actual size, like in this little box that he lives in, the vault is almost like a shoebox, or maybe even smaller than that, the result is that it makes him look like a baby. And this, of course, reinforces some of the central themes of Granny Goodness. She turns children into weapons. So her powerful weapon, in the end, is revealed to be a child. Now, although it's not specifically what Kyle wanted me to talk about, I can't pass over Overlord without mentioning his role in Granny Goodness's organization, which is that he is the dungeon controller. Without Overlord, the X-Pit would cease to function and Scott and Oberon could escape. Indeed, without him, the X-Pit ceases to function and Scott and Oberon do escape. And the idea of having a consciousness controlling the dungeon and having that consciousness be in some way accessible to the PCs, that's something that we've talked about before as well. Scott and Oberon are aware that Overlord is out there and that Overlord is a person, or at least, you know, a consciousness. Whether Overlord is a person, But the main thing that Kyle is asking about is scale. Because I do think that the scale shift of Overlord is a key part of like the reveal about the character, not even necessarily that it's that significant that he's small, but that it changes our perspective on him. We stop seeing Overlord as a terrifying menace, even though he is still dangerous, and we start to see him as a victim. We have more sympathy for him. See, Mr. Miracle escaped from Granny Goodness's orphanage. Overlord didn't, we can assume. So the monsters of the fourth world, when Mr. Miracle confronts them, I think there's always a sense of, you know, there but for the grace of God, or there but for the love of a good woman. But that scale shift is something that's really only possible not just in a visual medium, but in a visual medium that works in the specific way that comics work. It's Kirby's ability to control the framing and the look of the panel that make Overlord seem huge. It's not something that the characters ever discuss. It's not set up in a plot. No one ever says Overlord must be huge. You just feel like he must be because he's omnipresent and because of the way that Kirby portrays him on panel. The theme of the outsized impact of a very small thing is a recurring feature of the fourth world. You can actually see Kirby playing with the same idea in the graphic novel that concluded the fourth world saga, The Hunger Dogs. In that, there's a good deal of pontification about Isaac. You don't need to know about him, but anyway, he creates the micro mark. And this is basically just Kirby kind of commenting on miniaturization, the idea that it used to be that to wield power, you needed things that were big, armies or battleships. But computerization means that devices of great power can be very tiny. And he's kind of commenting on the change in, I don't know, attitudes that this leads to. So how do you deploy this idea in games? So I think there are a couple of things that you can do. One is to use the space around and outside the game. So, for instance, a lot of people will print out or, you know, draw themselves character portraits or other visual aids and hand them to the players or, you know, hang them on the GM screen, or if you're playing online. It's very common to have these kinds of things on the Roll20 or in the Discord, you know. When you introduce a new character, you just show an image of them. So you can use a character portrait that is very large or that portrays the character as very large. And even though you're not actually saying this character is 12 feet tall, it gives the feeling that they're massive, which is what you're trying to achieve. One thing I sometimes do is play with the theater of putting miniatures on the table. So a lot of the time, I keep the minis that I'm about to use concealed from the players. And this works basically because of the way that my living room is set up, such that behind the chair where I usually GM, there's a little bit of space where I can put things and they're not very visible to the players sitting at the table. And oftentimes I will cover over the box that I've got that session's miniatures in because I don't want them looking at the models and seeing what might come up. So all my miniature storage is upstairs and all my games are downstairs. So that means that if I whip out a miniature and put it on the table, that I foresaw that you would be encountering this, but I feel like it still feels more natural and less kind of railroady to not spoil the surprise. And it also allows you to do that thing where you get to put the miniature on the table as like a little bit of theater. The door opens and in the dim light of the room beyond you see, and then you put down the miniature of whatever it is, the Bodok, the Balrog, whatever. Cue gasps of shock and alarm. But I think that it's also possible to play with this space in a way that isn't directly just giving the players the model or giving the players the information. So like, for instance, you could have a huge Overlord miniature sitting next to your DM screen and the players could all see it and think, wow, that guy's enormous. And you just never actually place it on the tabletop. It's there just to create an impression of size and menace. Now, I said that this is just about the visual element, right? Those are all just methods of taking the visual element and applying it to the game, even a game that isn't, for the most part, visual. But what about a game that is truly, as they say, theater of the mind, where the GM doesn't normally use illustrations or miniatures or any other kind of visual aid? I think that one thing you could do is incorporate words which evoke the idea of huge size into your description when you do mention the character. So when Overlord is talking, you could say, Overlord's booming voice seems to fill the room, coming from every direction at once. Or you could, you know, Overlord is talking to them through, I don't know, speakers in the dungeon, right? Maybe you could always have Overlord's voice coming down from the ceiling. Just use language, use images that suggest huge size. Or like, maybe the characters see the game's Granny Goodness equivalent talking to the game's Overlord equivalent on her view screen. And it's a huge screen and his face fills it. Mr. Miracle actually says a worm can look like a sea serpent on a vid screen. You can do it through Overlord's dialogue. So if Overlord talks about the dungeon like it's his body, that will contribute to the idea that he's huge. You can also use a lot of images of large size in the dungeon itself. So talk about how these are colossal pillars and high ceilings and deep pits. You want that idea of scale and monumental size to be present in the player's minds, even if you yourself never explicitly come out and say, Overlord is colossal. You can even see this in the name, Overlord. Now, obviously, Overlord has a particular meaning, and Jack Kirby, as a World War II veteran, would also probably have another meaning for it. But you can do this with the name of your creature, like Overlord suggests being over something, being higher than it. So being big, being tall. You probably don't want to call the character Johnny Enormous or whatever, but you could definitely work something in there. For the comic fans among my listeners, we can get a little bit deeper in the weeds. So, as a robotic-looking figure with a giant head, seated in a sort of throne-like construction, I think that Overlord would remind a lot of Kirby fans of a character called Master Mold. So Master Mold is an X-Men villain. He's also co-created by Jack Kirby, first appeared in an X-Men comic in 1965. And Master Mold is huge. Master Mold is the kind of creator of the Sentinel robots, not like the person who did it, but is the machine that is used to make Sentinels. The podcast Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men routinely describes Master Mold as a giant Sentinel that poops out smaller Sentinels. But considering that those smaller Sentinels are big in the first place, Master Mold is pretty gigantic. So I do think that a lot of readers in 1971 might have looked at that illustration of Overlord and gone, ah, a little bit like Master Mold. Now, that's not super relevant for creating an Overlord-like monster, except that you could invoke similarities to other creatures that are huge. So when you describe the creature's face, it resembles Talos the Man of Bronze, or a Gundam, or Godzilla, or something. Or like an Easter Island head. If you say that the character's face resembles a Moai, one of those heads from Easter Island, even though you haven't said that, like them, this character is huge, the players will have that association in their mind. A lot of conveying size and, like, imposingness without lying about how big the character is really just about using words and phrases that evoke the idea of large size in the players' minds. One thing that I wouldn't do is have there be, like, a huge statue of Overlord or a huge doorway shaped like his face or something like that. If I, as a player, saw something like that in a game, my assumption would be that this was actually a tiny guy. I think it's just a Wizard of Oz thing that as soon as you see this kind of in-world monumentality, these gigantic representations of the character, you start to think, oh, this character wants me to think he's very large, which means that he's actually very small. But that's not the case with Overlord. He's imagined as large because of the large impact and large effect that he has. It's just that he's physically small because that's not important. He's controlling the dungeon with his mental powers, and those can belong to anyone, no matter how big or small they are. I think also it's important in the case of Overlord that his true size is only revealed after he dies. Mr. Miracle kills Overlord without ever actually seeing him. He just plugs Mother Box into the system that he's connected to, and she, like, traces back his location and zaps him with feedback. But when Mr. Miracle encounters Overlord, he doesn't think, you know, ah, yes, a little guy. I'm going to destroy that little guy. But there is a reveal. And as a result, both we as readers and Scott get to see the contrast between how we imagined Overlord and what he's really like. Note that despite this, the idea that being of small size makes Overlord seem like a pitiable character, Mr. Miracle does not feel any sense of remorse for killing Overlord. One of the things that Tom King's run on Mr. Miracle, and Tom King is a writer that I'm a bit, you know, hot and cold on, but one of the things that Tom King's run of Mr. Miracle does is really portray Mr. Miracle as this character who has a very violent life and like is immersed in violence, which is something that you don't get out of him very much in most contexts, because most of the time Mr. Miracle is hanging around with characters like Barda and Orion who are much more warlike than he is. So you don't get to the point of noticing that. I mean, actually, Scott has a pretty hard life full of violence. But Overlord's true size is a surprise, but it's a surprise that comes after he has died. And I think that that is probably important. It matters that Overlord is experienced as huge while he's being fought, because it makes him seem menacing and intimidating, which makes the people fighting him seem like the underdogs, which of course they are because he's so powerful, regardless of his small physical size. His power isn't physical. Having said that, I will say that the X-Pit is actually not super exciting. It's mostly an excuse for Kirby to draw a bunch of really wild stuff. And while that's fun, Kirby never really paid off the whole escape artist concept as much as he might have liked to. Most of the time what happens is that Mr. Miracle is confronted by some technological horror and he busts out a technological solution that you've never previously heard of. You know, oh, well, as it happens, I've got my technological horror destroying ray on me. I'm being a little unfair to Mr. Miracle, but only a little. That's Overlord. And I think the key point with Overlord is to use an Overlord-like character in a context where size is meaningful. So we're dealing with scale. We're dealing with the power and the fear of something that's much bigger than you. And where the idea of illusion and reality, which of course connects to Mr. Miracle as a like a performer, but the idea of illusion and reality is really important. That's something that's going to crop up all throughout the New Gods. We're going to see that one of the things Darkseid does is take things that are terrifying and make them appear to be normal, or sometimes take things that are normal and make them appear to be terrifying. All right. I think that's about all the time that I have to talk about Overlord for today. So Kyle, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. And remember, everyone else, if you'd like to be like Kyle and get your own special episode, all you've got to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we'll be taking a look at another set of monsters from Athas, the post-apocalyptic fantasy world that is home to the Dark Sun setting for AD&D. So I hope that you will join me then, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.